Ace Podcast.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And tonight we have quite a story for you, but before we get to that, we have two important announcements we want to make.
Oh no.
Don't worry.
Sam.
It's okay.
What's going on?
It's okay.
What are the announcements?
I know you're worried because we don't communicate on a professional level, and so sometimes you don't know what we're talking about.
We don't even communicate at all anymore.
No, we really, apart from this, this is about all we do together, and it's sad.
Anyway.
Because this takes up so much time.
Anyway, what do you got for us today, Sam? What's happening?
So, we've got two announcements we want to make. The first one is one that I'm sure is going to be no shocker to anybody. Right now, Texas is underwater, and we at Not Alone Podcast have decided to use a good chunk of our Patreon donations from this month of September, and we're going to funnel those to I don't know exactly what organization we're going to donate to, probably just the Red Cross. If anyone knows of a really good one to do, let us know, but we're going to take a chunk of those Patreon donations and send them to Texas. So guys, thank you so much for donating to the show and allowing us to do that. If you have it in your heart and in your bank account to send a little something, or even if you're just able to see other ways to get involved, I know that there's a lot of projects. You know, if you have like leftover or old shoes, if you have unopened socks, things like that, they really need it down there. So please, if you can give anything, please give whatever you can. And thank you guys so much for helping us to be able to do this.
Absolutely. I did know that one.
You did know that one. Okay.
About 30 minutes ago, I knew about that one.
We did talk about that. All right, good.
Was there something else?
There is one other thing. It's not like a show announcement at all. So you guys know that I like to tell you about new podcasts because I'm a podcasting nerd and I love two podcasts, and every moment of free time I have, I'm listening to podcasts. And there was a new podcast that just dropped, like I think by the time this comes out, 2 days ago. This one is near and dear to my heart because the podcaster who made it, Sawyer Westbrook, she had mentioned on the Facebook group podcast we listened to that she wanted to do a show and she didn't know if it was a good idea. And I told her, yes, absolutely do it. And then I just over the last like 3 months, I've just been like, Sawyer, do it. Make it happen. I believe in you so hard because the show is fantastic. It's called The Marble Garden. It's essentially Sawyer loves cemetery architecture, and so she will find a really interesting grave, a really interesting monument, and she will find about the person buried in the monument and kind of, you know, in her own little alchemical, magical sort of way, bring them back to life for 10, 15 minutes, you know? It's pretty nice. And her first...
Sounds horrible, Sam.
It does sound horrifying
like necromancy.
When I say it that way. But it really is just a good, fun show. Well, not fun, but a good, thought-provoking
interesting,
show.
Yeah.
Interesting,
yeah.
That's the
word. I would not have thought twice about, you know, a mausoleum or a crypt at the cemetery. There we go, that's the word for it. I was thinking graveyard, I'm like,
I mean,
nah.
Graveyard's a word.
I mean, it is, but it's not like, it's not the word.
Right.
When I think graveyard, I think much smaller.
Hey, do you think of a guy with a hunchback being like, oh, don't want to be here after dark, laddie? That's
pretty
when
much.
The ghosties come.
As soon as.
That'd be pretty bad.
As soon as night falls, fog out of nowhere.
Fog.
For some reason.
No matter what.
Fog. Everywhere.
And
everywhere.
Then a lone wolf. Ooh. Fog. Okay.
No, it's like a coyote, if anything.
Reel it in. Reel it back. So the first episode of the Marble Garden podcast just dropped 2 days ago, I think, by the time you heard this, maybe yesterday. It's about Captain William Ward, who lost part of his, like a big part of his family, to a shipwreck or to a tragedy at sea, essentially. And instead of being like a normal person and saying, I don't want to look at the sea. I don't want to be around the sea. He instead said, I'm going to become a master sailor. I am going to control the sea. I am the sea king. And that's what he did. So I'm not going to spoil anything for you. Eventually he died because that's the point of the podcast.
That's pretty killer.
But yeah, go check it out. We're going to put a direct link to that in the show notes. We don't hardly do that anymore, but we're going to do it with this one. So go ahead, check out the Marble Garden. Check out the Marble Garden podcast.
Maybe it's neither of us. Neither of us can actually
speak. Neither of us can speak correct English. But we're going to go ahead and we're going to get into the goodies, what you came here for. We have an excellent topic this week. Jason, what are we talking about?
The Mad Gasser of Mattoon.
Oh, spooky. So this story was one that really until this week, I didn't have a full appreciation for.
Why is that?
Well, I thought, you know what? Some guy went in.
Bunch of hot smoke?
Yeah, they gassed a few people, like two or three people, so be it. Whatever, but
it's just your lungs. You need those for something.
But I didn't realize the scope. I didn't realize that this individual, whoever he or she or they are, was responsible for at least over 26 documented attacks on this small town of Mattoon, Illinois in a 14-day period. I mean, that's a reign of terror.
26? It's been like 26 accused. Because the police didn't actually investigate most of those towards the later end, right?
The 26 that I reference, and we're not going to hit all of them, but we are going to hit like a good amount, are the ones that were investigated.
Okay.
So at least 26 is what I'm saying.
Oh, gosh. So
that
gross.
That is a full-blown reign of terror. So we're going to go ahead.
I'm surprised the whole city just wasn't covered in gas.
I know, right? You know what's really neat about this? You know what day this episode's coming out?
Is it the 31st?
August 31st.
Oh, my gosh.
And we are moving back now. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath and count down from five.
Five.
We're moving four, back. We're moving
three,
back to August.
Two. One.
31st, 1944. Early in the morning, one resident of the small town of Mattoon, Illinois, population around 15,000, Urban Ray, wakes up. And he immediately realizes that he feels weak and nauseated, and he actually begins vomiting. Now, he assumed that the gas had been left on and asked his wife to check the pilot light on the stove. His wife was completely awake. He had woken her up. She said, I don't think I left it on, but I'll check. But she realized that she was completely paralyzed and unable to move. Just a few hours later, nearly the same morning, another resident who chose to remain unnamed by the media awoke to hear her child coughing. She stumbles out of bed, realizes she can hardly walk, and also seems to be practically paralyzed. Now, the next evening, September 1st, around 11 p.m., you get your first big attack, or your first big story that comes out of this. There's a Mrs. Burt Kearney. Now, here's the thing. It's 1944. The paper, what we have for a source is the Mattoon Journal Gazette. And when the Mattoon Journal Gazette writes about women, they talk about their husbands. So I don't know.
You mean the mid-40s and the Midwest?
Yeah, exactly.
They talk about their husbands.
I mean, they reference them as Mrs. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so. So that's what we're working here, here, people. That's what we got. But Mrs. Burt Kearney, around 11 p.m., was asleep in the bedroom that she shared with her 3-year-old daughter, Dorothy, when she was awoken by a sickeningly sweet odor. Now, she thought that it had just been some flowers left on the windowsill, potentially rotting. But as she got there, the odor got stronger and stronger, and then she realized that she was paralyzed from the legs down. Now, Mrs. Kearney began screaming, and her sister, a woman named Mrs. Reedy, ran in. She determined that the smell was coming from the window and called the police. The cops, along with the neighbors, searched the grounds of the area, but found no one. And about an hour and a half later, at 12:30, Mrs. Kearney's husband, Bert, who we do know his first name, thank you, returned home from his occupation of being a cab driver.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's got to be rough in that small of a town.
Oh, yeah. Are you the only cab driver? Oh, you're either the only cab driver or you don't have any customers. Yeah, that's about the two options.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Now, Bert claimed that as he pulled up, he saw a figure standing at one of the windows of the home, which he described as a tall man dressed in dark clothing and wearing a tight-fitting cap. This began the citywide panic of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, and by the time it was over, the last attack took place on September 13th, pretty much exactly 2 weeks later. There were, by our counts, at least 26 separate encounters witnessed by at least 26 individuals, but many of these have 2 to 3 people. I think some of them were upwards of 4 or 5 who were affected at once. Now, the explanations of this incident have run the gamut from mass hysteria, which I'm sure that Jason is going to talk about quite a bit today.
No, not really.
Oh, good.
Not a lot. I just think it's the most logical.
I mean, that's fair. It is. It is a logical conclusion.
And that being said, I don't think mass hysteria happens easily.
No.
By any means.
It's not at the drop of a hat.
No, yeah. And I think being in such a small, remote area that... Again, you haven't brought it up yet, but I'm going to touch on it right now.
All
right. With information that an escaped
Nazis
prisoners gotten loose recently at a prison nearby, that puts people on edge. And I'm not surprised that this kind of story caught wind and just traveled like wildfire.
That's fair.
And then anything that you think is going on, you instantly assume it's that.
True. The thing about it, and we're gonna get into this.
Dude, our bodies do weird stuff, man.
Right, our bodies totally do weird stuff.
They take a lot of cues from our minds.
The thing about it, and again, we'll get into it a bit more here in just a few, but while I found the story about the Nazi, I didn't find it in the papers. I didn't find it in the reports that I read. So the actual things that people were reading that was theoretically, fueling this hysteria didn't mention this, especially in your idea, this key element of the story that would help cause that mass hysteria.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's all right.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into the gassings.
Now, mass hysteria, toxic industrial pollution, a real human attacker, a real alien attacker, literally a Bigfoot, everything.
Wait. Bigfoot.
Bigfoot.
What is he doing?
I could not find specifics.
Picking up Pepe Le Pew and just
I found,
squirting him through the window?
I found in the newspapers from a few years past it, and then I found in a lot of the books and written sources, people just throw it in. They're like, well, it could have been a guy. Could have been an ape guy, too. So I couldn't find what that
could be a wolfman. We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know anything, man.
It's the 1940s. Jazz is dead. And now, to get to the bottom of this, we need to start about 11 years earlier in a little area of the country about 624 miles to the east called Haymaker Town, Virginia. It's 10 p.m. on the evening of December 22nd, 1933. Mrs. and Mr. Cal Huffman of Haymaker Town were noxiously accosted by some extremely potent fumes that made their way into their home. Now, Mrs. Huffman felt extremely nauseated and decided to go to bed and attempt to sleep it off, but her husband Cal decided to stay up and stand guard. Half an hour later, another wave of gas returned, filling the home. Cal went to the home of his landlord and from there telephoned the police. The police sent their best and brightest, one individual named Officer Lemon, who stayed with the family and watched until about midnight. The area was searched, but almost nothing was found. But immediately after Lemon left at midnight, another stronger wave of gas rolled into the home, filling both floors and affecting all 9 individuals inside. Cal and another individual living in the home named Ashby Henderson both reported seeing a man running away after this attack.
That is a lot of gas.
It is a lot of gas.
How are you carrying that?
Those are the questions.
And these are not the answers.
No, they're not. Now, the one who took it the worst was the Huffman's 19-year-old daughter, Alice. Everybody else felt nauseated, had a headache, felt a little bit of a tightness in their throat, but Alice's throat and mouth muscles restricted so tightly that she passed out and had to be given artificial respiration in order to be revived. After the attack, for some time, Alice also experienced convulsions, which her doctor attributed to the gas attack.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was nasty. It was bad. And that was the first thing where I was like, oh, wow, this was not just some guy. Because really what I thought it was.
But this is down in Virginia. This is not
this
our
is
gas
down in
Virginia.
Virginia. But I, well, not potentially. We're going to get into
that. Well, I mean, it's not our main story.
Right.
Like, but, why weren't we talking about this guy? Was it just this one singular attack, or are we talking about multiple?
Oh, no, dude. You see
so this whole 11 years previously, mm-hmm. this whole prelogue, whatever. This whole prelogue that we're experiencing is how many attacks? How long?
Oh, man. So that's the thing. Is it mirrors Mattoon very closely. So you have at least a dozen, if not like 18 attacks, I want to say, and it's in that same 1 to 2
week
period.
What I remember from Mattoon is not this violent of a gas attack.
So
like that is hospitalization. We're not talking right. about hospitalization in Mattoon.
You do have a hospitalization in Mattoon. You have, and we'll get there in a minute, I can't remember the name, but you actually have in Mattoon, yeah, we don't have convulsions, but I mean in Mattoon you had a woman spitting up blood, like coughing up blood because of the gas.
Okay.
So it is, if left to the devices and able to be carried out fully, there is a good chance that this was supposed to be a lot more violent than it turned out. Now, this was the first thing where I was like, wow, this is something more than just someone making people feel sick. That's what I thought it was at first. It was like, oh, he's spraying gas, people are sick, they're throwing up, whatever. Like, that is pretty horrific stuff. The police officially launched a full-scale investigation, but they were unable to find the culprit. They were also unable to positively identify the gas that was used. The only clue that was found was the print of a woman's high heel under the window that the gas had been sprayed through. Now, the next attack took place.
Do you picture a stiletto? I picture a stiletto.
I do picture a stiletto. That is exactly. Like, I'm not even kidding.
I picture a red stiletto.
Yep.
It's the only thing I have come to my mind.
That's what the gasser wears.
Isn't that great marketing? Oh.
I don't know how you run away in that. Although there are people who can do that. And I'm proud of them. Now, the next attack took place on Christmas Eve in the nearby town of Cloverdale. Clarence Hall and his wife and two children came home from church around 9 p.m., and about 5 minutes later, they noticed a strange odor. Clarence went to investigate the smell. When he came back a moment later, he was staggering. He was swaying around. He started talking about how he felt sick, and he wasn't actually able to leave the house. The wife and children ran outside. The wife went back then and grabbed him and dragged her husband out of the house. Thankfully, no one was seriously injured there. Now, after one more minor incident, the gasser seemed to go up in smoke until January 10th. The details of this incident, in addition to the obvious similarities, are one of the greatest links between the mad gasser of Mattoon and the phantom anesthetist of Virginia. Now, a Mrs. Moore, whose husband was out of town, was staying at the home of Homer Hilton near Haymaker Town. Around 10 p.m., she got up to check on her baby when she heard mumbling voices outside the window. Suddenly, gas flooded into the baby's room. Mrs. Moore reached to grab her child, but realized that she was about to go numb, or starting to go numb. A neighbor by the name of G.E. Poage confirmed that they also heard low mumbling voices outside at around the same time.
Whoa. Plural?
Yeah, plural.
We've got multiples.
Potentially multiple culprits.
This is like a thing. This is a whole thing.
Your vocabulary is on
this is
point.
Dude, my vocab sucks.
That's okay. That's all right.
If you haven't noticed from this podcast yet, I don't know words.
Don't know words, and we love him anyway.
And I can't spell them either.
Now, on January 22nd, there were three separate attacks moving south through the town of Carvin's Cove over a distance of 2 miles. The affected parties were the families of Ed Reedy, George C. Riley, and Raymond Etter. In each home, which gave corroborating reports, the individuals involved felt numbness seizing their bodies. The police set up a roadblock, but the gasser was not caught. One of Raymond Etter's sons claimed to see a man fleeing from the direction of a house, of the house, and attempted to catch him, even firing a few shots at him, but he missed. Now, this is where things kick into high gear. On January 23rd, a truly disturbing event took place, wherein a Mrs. R.H. Hartzell and her family returned to their home early in the morning around 4:30 a.m. As they approached the home, they realized makeshift barricades. Sticks and piles of wood have been placed in front of the doors as if attempting to block entry or block exit from the home. Upon entering, they realized that the house was full of gas and that it was supposed to be them that was sealed inside. Now, after this, people really started freaking out. They were freaking out already, but suddenly the police said, okay, we're going to take this serious. This isn't just some crappy kids having a prank, which is what they had originally thought. Roving bands of impromptu militiamen began to wander the streets with loaded rifles, loaded shotguns, and the police started to expand their theories. One of the most popular was that the assailant was most likely, in their minds, a veteran of World War I, someone who may have been a victim of a gas attack themselves during the war, which caused them to go mad.
And just loves to wear ladies' shoes.
And loves those ladies' shoes. Now, the final attack of note took place on February 3rd. It, like the first, was a very large attack, including multiple injections and lingering effects. The home was that of A.P. Skaggs and his wife and children, as well as five other adults. The gas here also seemed to cause mental effects, as well as physiological ones. One of the children began screaming that they were trapped in the house, though nothing was stopping them from leaving, but they were convinced that they could not get out. And the next day they found the family dog rolling around in the snow, as a well-trained dog will do when it is sprayed by a skunk, but of course there was no skunk present. Now, I wasn't able to find the specific physiological effects that took place, but a Sheriff Williamson, who investigated the attack, would tell skeptics that no amount of imagination in the world would make people as ill as the Skaggs are.
You know what I find kind of weird about these heels?
Hmm.
They don't, like, actually say the sizing. Like, there's no information about, like, hey, are they, like, weirdly large?
Or right.
Are they like, normal size?
Size 14s, yeah.
Yeah, that, I think, man, that's one of the issues about going to see these stories, like, 70 years ago.
Shoddy police work.
Yeah. Come on, Mr. Lemon.
Officer Lemon to you.
Is he still? After he's, this, I mean, he might dead. Be off the force.
Well, he's just dead.
That's also fair.
That was,
that's a long time ago.
84 years ago.
I mean, hey, he could still be kicking. You never know.
That's fair. So, the other thing that happens at the end of these attacks in Virginia, as we'll see what happens with Mattoon, is the press begins to slowly but surely say, well, this was all just a panic. This was all mass hysteria. Maybe one or two of these were real. Maybe not even that. But basically, people freaked out and that's all it was. And that's why it's been pretty much forgotten from history. But now we're going to go ahead. We're going to bring, after we've brought that back, we're going to bridge the link. Link the bridge.
So, tell me, what's the link?
The link? Oh, dude, I'm not going to tell you.
Besides for a fairly matching MO.
I'm not going to tell you until it's at the end of the thing. And I'm going to pull, like, a lore where I, like, save a little twist for the end.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, gosh.
I can't wait.
Right?
I can. I can wait forever. But keep going, okay. Sam. Tell me what's next.
So now,
take us to Mattoon, Illinois.
We're going back to Mattoon. We're going to bridge the link. Now, with that exposition out of the way, we wake back up. It's September 2nd, 1944. We're back in Mattoon, Illinois. Mrs. Kearney has just awoken, realized that her lips were burned, and her throat and mouth were completely parched. And this is when the story first got press coverage, brought about by the Mattoon Journal-Gazette. Now, from this September 2nd article, which ran in the evening edition, we find out even more specifics regarding the attack. One of them was that Mrs. Kearney stated that her paralysis wore off after around 30 minutes after she realized what was happening. We also learned that the early front runners, considered to be the gas being used, were either chloroform, ether, or possibly a mixture of both.
Makes sense for the time period.
It does. But it is interesting to note that both of these gases had been ruled out in the 1933 attacks in Haymakerstown, and they were ruled out again here shortly after being put forward as an idea. Now, this article was front page news, running in only slightly smaller print than the news of Allied forces sweeping through Germany. It was the nightly edition and was more than mildly sensationalistic. The article referred to Mrs. Kearney and her daughter as the first victims of the gasser, although at that point no other victims had been reported. So it's kind of like being like, your neighbor got murdered. He's first. Who's next?
Well, you know, shockingly enough, you know, we've got a lot more cases to bring up.
Yeah, we do. So, who would have guessed?
They were the first.
They were the first. But
I'm going to go with that newspaper. They guessed. How did I just say newspaper? Newspaper.
Newspaper, as the French would say. Hello, French listeners. I don't think we have any of those, but...
They have better taste.
They do have better taste. So, yes, that newspaper has been extremely criticized over the years. And I mean, I found just every few years, they kind of just like slip something about the mad gasser back in. They're like, hey, remember that time we broke that story about the mad gasser? It was great for selling papers. Let's try to sell some more papers. I was able to find in an article from their July 6th, 1945 edition, they make a cheeky remark about how the gasser ended up being a good thing for the town.
Yeah, publicity.
Right. People got
hurt,
though.
In a small town.
Yeah. Then that's what they were saying. They're like, yeah, the gasser was bad, but look at all this publicity we got. And it's like, that's kind of insensitive. And then later on, there was like, they were talking about a ghost in Colorado for some reason. They're like, maybe it's the mad gasser. And it's like, okay, guys.
It's not.
Put it to bed, please. That was like 20 years later also. So they just kind of rode on it. They just kind of kept it going.
Well, I mean, again, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
What else do you talk about?
It's true. But
you have one exciting thing happen. Mm-hmm. What else? Again.
But I'm saying there's more responsible ways to report on it than she's first. Who's next? It's just not very
professional.
Find
out tonight at 9.
As you get attacked by the mad guesser. Now, by September 5th, 3 days after the original story was published, the police had received 4 more reports of gas attacks. All of the affected described the same sickly sweet odor and experienced the same partial paralyzation for 30 to 90 minutes. Just like before, the police didn't know what to make of this. Was this some punk kid? Was it something bigger? In fact, for a time there, they weren't sure that it wasn't just all an invention to sell papers. By that time, there had been no real evidence left. The smell of the gas was usually gone by the time they got there. There were no physical artifacts to be found. However, that night, they found the first hard evidence in the case, and really, almost the last. There's not a lot of hard evidence here.
Hard evidence, you say? What you got for me, Sam?
All right. That night, September 5th, around 10:30... a Mrs. Cords and her husband Carl returned home. They entered through the back door, as was their custom, and after a few minutes they noticed a white cloth pressed up against their screen door on the front porch. Mrs. Cords investigated it, unfolded it, saying it was a little bigger than a men's handkerchief, and noticed a wet spot in the middle. Instinctively, she took a big whiff of the cloth. Thank you. That's not disgusting at all.
That's what I'm here for, sound effects.
There we go. Now, what happened next, in her own words, quote, "When I inhaled the fumes from the cloth, I had a sensation similar to coming in contact with a strong electric current.
Ooh.
The feeling raced down my body to my feet and then seemed to settle in my knees. It was a feeling of paralysis," unquote. Immediately after the paralysis, her lips began to swell, her mouth and throat began to burn, and she started coughing up blood.
I think the moral of that story is not to sniff weird things.
Now, she was taken to the doctor, took about 2 hours, but finally felt normal again. The next day, though, and here's another piece in the evidence column, she was interviewed by the paper. They did confirm her lips and face were still swollen, as did the police. Who interviewed her for a police investigation. Now, they also found on the porch a skeleton key and an empty lipstick tube. Do you know what a skeleton key is?
Yes.
Yeah, good.
It's cute. It looks like a skeleton.
Oh.
No.
I'm kidding. I know what it is. But why the tube with lipstick?
That's the big question. So the skeleton key, for any listener who doesn't know, is a key that is specially engineered to be able to open the majority of a single type of lock. And it's, you know, used by prowlers, housebreakers, burglars, all the like. But the tube of lipstick, which was empty, but there was still, like, residue of lipstick in there. So it's not, apart from potentially hiding the skeleton key, which is a possibility, there's not a lot else it would have been doing other than literally holding lipstick.
Like, why would you leave that behind?
Well,
why would you leave either of those things behind?
The working theory was that the prowler was in the process of breaking in, found themselves interrupted by the couple returning, and still wanted to perform the attack, and so they left their things out there, probably thought that they had hidden them better, something like that, and were planning to come right back, essentially. Just get out of the way for a second so that they're not seen.
But it's a key. Put it in your pocket.
Right.
Tube of lipstick.
Put it in your pocket. But the other thing is, if they're picked up with a tube of lipstick, well, not the tube of lipstick, with a skeleton key and a cloth doused in chemicals, if they're picked up for any reason, and this couple comes home and realizes anything at all, you know, oh, our lock looks like it's been jimmied, or this door is unlocked when it wasn't supposed to be, this person immediately is going to be like, oh, I have the implements of a burglar on me, as well as chemicals. It's okay, officers. So the thought is that you leave it there as well for safety, so that you're not picked up.
I guess this was before DNA and everything, so.
Yeah. That was what you had.
Fingerprinting. A decent way to keep a fingerprint, you know what I mean? Like a decent, right. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. Theories.
Now the thing about it is that someone was picked up. There was a man who was unnamed. The police never gave his name, but there was a man who was picked up about the same time as the Cords coming home to find this. He was picked up a block from the Cords' home. And he told the police, oh, I'm just lost. And they were like, oh, he's just lost. And they let him go. Now, the city was suddenly on high alert. I mean, you have this woman coughing up blood. This is again, just like before, this is real. This is something that's happening, and it's freaky. Now, the police chief was a man named E.C. Cole. He ordered the entire police force, which consisted of 10 people, to be on 24-hour duty. Yeah, I know.
Wakey-wakey, boys!
It sucks for these guys. They have nothing, and as we'll see here in a minute, people were really upset with them. And they're like, why can't you do this? And they're like, we got 10 people. That's not one person. That's not one cop for every 1,000 people in this city. We got 10 people. What are we supposed to do? So they sit up for, they're on 24-hour around-the-clock duty. The cloth is sent for analysis by chemists at the University of Illinois, but came back completely inconclusive. The next night, there were 3 separate attacks. One Mr. Fred Goebel, who was attacked, witnessed a tall man fleeing from Mr. Goebel's house around 1 a.m. Now, on September 8th, the police apparently came forth with the theory that the gasser was a young person experimenting with a chemistry set. However, things were getting more and more insidious.
They had way better chemistry sets in the 40s than I got.
Yeah.
Way
better. You can make stuff to kill people with this chemistry set. You can't do that nowadays.
No.
Now, things, however, were getting more and more insidious and more frequent as well. Another theory that gained traction was that the perpetrator was actually a woman, a nurse, and a war nurse, to be more specific. Someone who would have treated gas attacks. Now, one victim was an 11-year-old girl. She was found unconscious in her bedroom. Her name is not released. The details aren't released. It's a minor. You don't really want to do that. And around this time, people started leaving the porch lights on. They stayed up keeping watch all evening. The city began to teeter on the brink of anarchy as this aforementioned 10-person police force was started to be harassed by their inability or for their inability to catch the gasser. And a group of businessmen ordered a or announced a mass protest that Saturday the 9th in order to put more pressure on the police, because the police weren't already under enough pressure. They felt like these people were just sitting there like, oh, we could catch the gasser, but I'd rather play a round of golf. Jeff, what do you think, Harold? Let's go play some golf. As if they weren't on all day around the clock duty anyway. It sucks. Like, these people were working really hard, and the people of the town were just not appreciative, but at the same time, they were scared out of their frickin' minds. So this group of businessmen says, we're going to make a protest. And then just like before, bands of wandering vigilantes form. And now they're roaming the streets. Their guns are loaded. They're going to catch the gasser. For a little brief period, I think a night, I think there's 1 to 2 nights where the gasser is quiet. Nothing happens. Maybe it's the porch light. Maybe it's the militias. Everything might be okay. But then the evening of the 8th comes up, and the gasser resumes his attacks, first targeting the home of Mrs. Violet Driscoll. Now, Violet and her 11-year-old daughter, Ramona, woke late in the evening to the sounds of someone tampering with the bedroom window. They smelled gas and ran outside. Ramona began vomiting, and Violet swears that she saw a man running away from the home. Two more attacks followed that evening, with all the affected experiencing nausea and paralysis that was now a telltale sign of the gasser's presence. One of these attacks was on a pair of sisters by the name of Smith, Francis and Maxine, who reported a blue smoke-like vapor entering the room, accompanied by an electrical buzzing that seemed to imply a mechanical distribution of the gas. And the Journal Gazette was not helping the situation either. They spoke with these sisters and painted the picture of helpless victims, completely powerless against the phantom and his wily tricks. Nothing you can do can protect you. It was terrible. It was total scare tactics. Was it,
yeah,
sell
just
papers.
As bad as that description?
It was just as bad as what I just said, because that's pretty much exactly what they just said. Now, it's around this time that the city was just about to grind to a complete halt. Finally, state authorities stepped in to help not only with the investigation, but also to quell the vigilante movement. They said, guys, and they weren't super successful with that. What they were successful with was they said, guys, come on, the police are working hard enough. Do not do this stupid protest. Just everybody's going to be able to go on. Everybody's going to be fine. Let's keep moving forward. Two FBI agents arrived in town without announcement, without identification, and were supposedly there to attempt to identify the type of gas and thereby trace it back to the culprit. Now, on September 9th, regardless of the militias, no less than 6 gas attacks were reported. One of the sites of these attacks was the home of a pair of sisters named Smith, the same as the ones that previously reported the previous night, the mechanized buzzing noise that accompanied, as well as the smoke entering their home. So it was a repeat attack. Now, some of the other homes attacked were those of rural farmers out in the countryside away from town. And this was something that had not occurred before. The majority of these attacks happened pretty well in the same part of Mattoon. Now, the police were officially overwhelmed. And to this effect, a statement was made by the police commissioners, whose remarks were as follows. Quote, there is no doubt but that a gas maniac exists and has made a number of attacks, but many of the reported attacks are nothing more than hysteria. Fear of the gas man is entirely out of proportion to the menace of the relatively harmless gas he is spraying. The whole town is sick with hysteria, and last night it spread out into the country. Now, this statement can be interpreted in one of two ways. The first being that this was, of course, just a genuine message. The cops were saying, get a hold of yourself, town. Come on. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But the other interpretation, which is pretty widespread, but I read about it in the book Mysterious America by Lauren Coleman, which is a fantastic source for this episode. I recommend you all read it. We'll put a link to it. He believes, and I agree with him, that this was not a genuine, authentic statement. It was more of a carefully calculated shifting of the blame. The police knew that they were in the wrong. They knew that the attacks reported for the most part were real, actual attacks, but they simply could not do their jobs. The police hoped that they could discourage people from making additional reports and kind of sweep the whole thing under the rug. Now, the fact that the testing of the cord's cloth had came back negative for any identifiable subject or substance meant that suddenly, instead of being another victim, you were opening yourself up to ridicule. You know, the cords, even that little bit of hard evidence that they thought they had, we had no evidence at all. And people started to say more of mass hysteria and hoax and environmental factors, as opposed to believing it was an actual living, breathing person doing this. And reports definitely did decrease after the statement, which coupled with a mandate by the police commissioner, which stated that anyone who wanted to report an attack was required to undergo an examination at the Mattoon Memorial Hospital. This marked the 9th of September as the climax of the gassers' reign of terror. However, attacks did still continue. On the 10th, a Mrs. Fitzpatrick nearly collapsed. A short time later, three sisters found themselves affected by the gas. The eldest was examined by a doctor who did confirm a physiological problem with her, ordering her to bed rest until such a time as the problem was resolved. On the night of the 11th, the Monday, a large number of calls were made, but the police did a little bit of pre-investigative investigation and said, you know what? None of it's real. It's fine. They're all false alarms. Every single one of these is a false alarm. And again, with the kind of, like Lauren says, just sweeping it under the rug. After the statement as well, the respectable people of the town, the government officials and the like, began touting the line that it was all just mass hysteria. Now, the only possible alternative explanation given beyond mass hysteria was that the nearby Atlas Imperial Engine Company, a factory which created machinery for the war, was pumping carbon tetrachloride into the air, which could cause a negative effect on the town, the air, the smell of everything. However, a spokesperson for the plant quickly responded, stating that the tetrachloride is only used in fire extinguishers. Any gas used in the factory was completely odorless, produced no known ill effects, and also, gas from a factory doesn't cut window screens, doesn't remove nails, doesn't break into people's houses. And this factory had been in full swing for a while now, for a number of years. So why would it possibly start affecting people now? Now, the final attack of note took place on September 13th. Bertha Bench claimed that the gas had been sprayed into her room. And here it is, Jason. I said we're going to bring it all back. I said I'm going to do a little lore kind of twist. Here it is. The gas had been sprayed into her room by a woman dressed like a man. The next morning, she found imprints of high heel shoes underneath her bedroom window. That little detail there, in combination with the earlier types of attacks, the earlier side effects and reported behaviors and symptoms, that's the thing that kind of ties the exposition in with this. Now, there are still people who state that the gas attacks are unrelated. Not only that the ones between Haymaker Town and Illinois were unrelated, but also just in general, that there wasn't one mad gasser. The mass hysteria argument is not completely without merit. You know, once the madness began to subside, the Journal Gazette posted a brief sidebar about humorous things that had happened because of the gasser. One was a man who was scared of his cat. He, like, woke up his wife. He was like, honey, the gasser's outside. Will you go fight him off? Which also, why? This is 1940s America. Typical masculinity is in effect. You shouldn't be waking your wife for that, man. Anyway. And of course, it was just a cat. Now, the other one is that this woman shot a hole in the side of her house. She heard, like, something rattling outside. It was probably also a cat. She grabbed her gun and she shot a hole through the wall. So that was fun. But
oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's the wind.
Yeah, in that case, it was. But there is enough to show that there was, in fact, mass hysteria going on. Like, that is obviously a part of what happened because people were scared, because there was something happening, in my opinion. You know, you have these multiple reports that happened before that first article came out. And yeah, the Nazi escaped Nazis, like, a good theory. But for me,
let me clarify. I don't think the escaped Nazi is the gasser.
No. You think that it started
the idea of having someone that's potentially dangerous.
Right.
Outside.
Right.
Running around at night.
It unsettles people.
Exactly.
And it leads to mass hysteria. But again, I mean, hysteria doesn't cause the face to swell. It doesn't cause nails to get pulled out and screens to get cut open. Like, there were physical documented evidence. Like, it wasn't the hard-hitting, like, oh, this cloth is full of chloroform. There's the proof. It wasn't anything like that, but there were these little bits and pieces around the town.
I still just don't see a motive, man.
I hear you. And I mean, we're going to get there, because I have a good ringer here. But one of the big ones is that it's all in kind of the same vein of mass hysteria, but with an actual truth behind it as well, which is kind of what I subscribe to. But even more so, you have, like, of course, in 1933, you're in the Great Depression after World War One. In 1944, you're in World War Two. So there is this idea of, oh, the Nazis, oh, the Germans. Gas was used in World War One, which, by the way, in accounts with that, last week, remember when we were like, why would we want that information about biological weapons and, like, weapons testing, stuff like that, remember?
Yeah.
So, actually, one listener wrote in, tweeted in, and states, and then I did some follow-up research, the United States definitely tested mustard gas on its own troops. Thousands of troops. So, that happened. And that kind of rolls into the next theory, which is a bit more conspiratorial. So you have the idea that, like, this subconscious, the Germans are coming. You also have the idea of there was a really popular character in, like, Pulp Fiction and radio plays of the time called The Shadow, who was, like, this vigilante who went out punishing the wicked and stuff like that. Maybe that had a part to play in the collective psyche. The other option, though, is, like I said, that this may have been more conspiratorial, that this may or may not have been sanctioned by the U.S. government. Now, it's been speculated that the reason why the gas was so unidentifiable was because it was some sort of a whole new thing, potentially some sort of new non-lethal weapon meant for use in the war. Now, in this scenario, the two FBI spooks who blew in from out of town changed from looking for the gas to catch a culprit to instead monitoring the town and its residents and the effect that the gas takes both psychologically and physically. A substance that left its target incapacitated for up to an hour and a half with no long-term side effects would be perfect for capturing enemy combatants alive in order to gain information. Like I said, World War One, we did definitely do mustard gas testing on our own people. Granted, they were enlisted troops. It wasn't just the public, but like we kind of mentioned, I may have cut it out, but with projects like MK Ultra, stuff like that, this sort of public testing has happened before. It is a government fact that these things do happen. Now, you also have the fact that this assailant who tried so hard to be seen as a man was, by a lot of accounts and by the only little bits of evidence that we actually do have, was most likely a woman. Some insist that the gasser worked with another individual, or even that the gasser was two separate individuals based on different reports. The first was that in that attack from the first wave of Virginia, you actually had the neighbors of victims stating that they had seen a man and woman driving back and forth of a victim's house around the same time as the attack. And the second was of Mrs. Moore, who described hearing more than one voice mumbling outside the window. The other theory is, of course, that there's one gasser and then 20 copycats. I mean, there's a theory for everything, really. And at the end of the day, I would say it's most likely that the assailant is a woman. She would just have to do a little bit of changing after the attack, and then she would be completely unrecognizable from the figure that was seen running away. The only thing we have are the footprints, the lipstick case. That's the only hard evidence for sure that's in this case. So For me, that's a more likely scenario. You do have your less likely scenarios. You have Wolfman, Bigfoot, ETs, all have been associated with this event. You also have the fact that in theory, the gasser can kind of pop in and out of existence, go invisible, what have you.
Like the shadow.
Like the shadow. Exactly. Gosh. That's the whole point of it. That's the whole point of it. That's the exact point, is that you have this comic book. Well, not comic book, but would have been a comic book.
But yeah, a figure in pop culture that can influence what you think you're seeing.
Exactly. Part of that mass hysteria sort of thing, but not that. I mean, you have mass hysteria, but something did happen, but it's not a freaking, it's not the shadow.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it too is also once you have a description, once you have it was a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. This is their physical descriptions. Mm-hmm. Or once you have that out to the general public, just like what I dug up from Nessie, is that once you have that general description of it, that is what people see.
That's the mold, yeah.
And everything after that will be following that.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Or it could all be following it because
it is true.
It's the same thing. Yeah. It's like, it's this, like with Nessie, it's a different thing. Because there's no Nessie. Maybe.
Yes, said it.
Maybe. There might not be a Nessie. But with this, it is. I mean, you have a suspect. If the suspect's doing the crime, it's going to look the same. So the only thing linking extraterrestrials with this is the smell. Really is the smell. The sickly sweet and paralyzation is exactly like what Whitley Strieber described. It's exactly recounted by UFO abductees all the time. The difference is the people didn't say they were abducted. They just felt paralyzed, felt sick, smelled something weird, then woke up. So for me, I don't think it was aliens on this one. What do you think?
I think it was mass hysteria.
Okay, that's fair. Now, the big question though.
Yeah.
If it was anything other than mass hysteria, and you mentioned it already, why? What's the possible?
Yeah, what? Like, okay,
what's
so
the motive?
What's the motive? You're not killing anybody.
Right.
You're not getting any notoriety from it.
Right.
Besides for this ultra persona you might have.
Right.
There's, and everything's sporadic.
Right.
There's no like typical person that you were gassing. Mm-hmm. What? It just doesn't make sense.
I know. I know it doesn't. And I'm so happy.
And the gas
you asked
hits you and then evaporates fast enough before anyone can find it.
Yep.
It's tough.
But there is one last theory that up until I learned about this theory, I had a different favorite theory, and it was the government conspiracy. Who would have guessed? But this
Shocker.
Is my new favorite theory. Now, I'm going to start by saying that in this theory, the earlier accounts, 1933, 1944, are completely unrelated other than some borrowed ideas, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I don't see them as being related either.
Yeah. And that's one of, I mean, two camps. Some researchers swear they are. Some swear they aren't.
We should have camp shirts.
What?
We should have shirts of different camps.
But, oh, yeah. I can dig that.
So pitched up a little tent.
Wait, I lost the plot again. What?
Camps.
Oh, God. Okay, we're almost there. Okay.
All right.
So, in this theory, like I said, completely unrelated. Now, according to author and chemistry teacher Scott Maruna, the culprit was a local boy named Farley Llewellyn. I say local boy. At this point, he would have been a man. Now, the Llewellyns were a well-known local family, described as a pillar of the community, who owned the local general store. They also wielded some political power in Mattoon. Now, the son, Farley, was described as an odd, different, or a recluse of a boy by almost everyone who knew him. Although his family was affluent and well-known, Farley never really fit into the community and was said to be the butt of many jokes in school, especially those surrounding his love of chemistry. Now, Farley goes off to the University of Illinois. He studies chemistry. He comes back with a degree in chemistry. He's described as gifted and brilliant and talented in this region. But after he moves back home to Mattoon, working in Dad's grocery store, living with his parents and his sisters, Florence and Catherine, he's like, I'm not doing what I can do. I'm not at the best of my ability. And though that kind of, those rumors come back. Well, that Farley was always a weird guy. He was always, there's just something wrong about him. Any other guy would have a job in his field by now. What the heck? And so he starts to drink heavily. He has a secret chemical workshop out back of the grocery store. And just a few days before August 31st, when the attacks start, it blows up while he's experimenting. The majority of attacks took place in the part of town where the Llewellyns lived, and a good number of the victims were either high school classmates of Farley or related to those classmates. Now, Scott Maruna suggests that the gas may have been homemade nitromethane produced by Farley, which produces all of the same effects that the victims reported and also smelled the same sickly sweet way. Nitromethane also evaporates very quickly and doesn't leave behind much of a trace at all. But one of the most damning pieces of evidence against Farley is that he was almost immediately considered a person of interest, but because of political power of his family, this was never announced publicly. However, what happened was he was placed under police supervision for a period of days, a few days, and it was said that in order to keep his brother out of trouble, his sisters committed the final gas attacks to throw suspicion off of him. Scott also mentions in his book, which the book is called like The Mad Gasser Dispelling the Hysteria. It's out of print. You can buy, there's one copy on Amazon for $350. I've heard it's not that great, but it is full of great information. And this information comes from that book, from different sources within it. Now, Scott also mentions that the tight, quick kind of practice professional attacks got sloppier and sloppier and by the end. And at that last time, that's when the attacked noticed or witnessed that the attacker was not a man, but rather a woman dressed up as a man. And it was on that final attack that they found that the attacker appeared not to be a man at all, but rather a woman dressed like a man, leaving high heel prints behind, most likely one of the sisters of Farley trying to throw suspicion off him. After the final attack, his family placed him into a mental institution. As soon as wind of this got to the police, they quietly closed the investigation informally and started going even harder at the mass hysteria angle. And it was even said that the majority of the citizens of Mattoon, or at least the affluent ones, knew that it was Farley who was behind it the entire time, but kept quiet, sort of an open secret of the town. After Farley was committed, there was never another gas attack in Mattoon to this day.
So why did he come back to Dad's?
I don't know.
General story.
Probably just because he was a weirdo.
If he is like that good of a chemist and like graduate that kind of praise and that right. level and that skill, why is he back there, especially in like wartime?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they want him to go to war. He was like, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to go to war.
I don't know.
It doesn't say exactly. I'm sure that if we were able to afford that $350 book,
no.
We might be. Yeah, I'm not spending no. three. I don't. This isn't me being like, somebody buy that book. Don't buy that book for us. We don't
Please,
need it.
Don't buy it for yourself either. Don't buy it. There at are better. All.
You could buy a Nintendo Switch for that kind of money, people. So, yeah, it doesn't. I don't have all of the information. I do know that the timeline, the age, doesn't line up with the 1933 attacks. But that's not to say that he didn't get some ideas from there. Essentially,
that's more fair.
Yeah,
I could see one being not a copycat, but you know, influenced by the previous.
Yeah, exactly. And then you do. I mean, you have the idea as well that, again, even though Farley may have done the majority of them, there were still a lot of copycats and there was still a lot of mass hysteria.
Well, there can't be copycats. If he's the one with the formula, if he's the one with the gas, you can't copy the gas.
Well, you do
have... Unless you're a brilliant chemist.
Right. It's not...
Which, if he's the only brilliant chemist in town, then...
he's the only chemist. They actually had four suspects, two of which were... I think, professional chemists, and two of which were amateurs. I don't know why this town has so many chemists. And I'm sure Farley was one of those. But they never announced it, even, that he was under investigation.
Okay.
No, but you can still have a copycat. He can't use the nitro methane.
Well, that's...
But...
That is the gas used. Otherwise, right. You have another copycat gas that does the same exact thing?
Not the same thing. That's the thing. Like, yes,
it's
you have...
It's been the same thing. It's been paralysis and then evaporation quickly.
Right. Sometimes there was lingering gas smell. Sometimes there wasn't. It wasn't, that's the other thing that a lot of people do show to be like, well, there's something weird going on, is while a lot of the effects were similar, like for instance, take Mrs. Cords. Now, granted, it's the fact she actually inhaled it at a close range, but she was the only person to actually like cough up blood from it.
So we have two different delivery systems, really.
Right.
All the cases, except for one, have some like sort of spray system.
Right.
Or like fogger thing that fills the room, while we have a handkerchief that is doused with some sort of chemical substance.
So you're saying
that comes back inconclusive.
So you're saying it was probably a copycat?
No, what I'm saying is that I think there are two separate things going on. I think there's the mass hysteria that's causing the gasser, and that this was something else with the handkerchief.
Not related in any way to the other gas attacks in the town.
Nope.
That's a really strange view to take, but I respect
Why?
That.
Why? Because we're not seeing like a modification. We don't see like an evolution of
right.
of his MO or right. her MO.
But it's if not you're like, saying that like this has absolutely, I'm not saying that it's the same person or anything.
I'm saying it's weird, but
for it to have absolutely no bearing, like this other guy was like, I'm going to go to Mrs. Cord's house. I'm going to leave this freaking thing. I'm going to make her cough up blood. Oh, there's a gasser on the loose? What? That's not me. I'm doing this thing.
I think, if anything, it's more of a cover. Like, oh, it's going to be rolled into the gasser.
Right, which is the other thing, kind of like with the...
I don't think it was a straight... Yeah, I don't think it was like a straight, literally, like, copycat. I think it was something else that was...
I want to get back at the cords, and we're going to do it now. Yeah. It, and that's the other thing is it's very similar to the Beast of Gevaudan, where these people are ending up dead, and maybe
who the heck
you
puts
have
a piece of weird cloth up and just
it's
it takes a deep breath of
every
it.
Every part of that doesn't make a lot of sense.
It just doesn't feel quite right, and that's I think my biggest issue with this is there's a lot of things that
just seem
don't
a little weird.
Feel right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Because
I mean, to be honest, if I wanted to get back at everyone, try to hurt them more than just paralysis.
But maybe you don't want to kill him. Maybe you just want to scare him. You know, that's what's so hard to tell.
Right.
Obviously, the person committing these attacks is a sociopath of some kind.
That, and I figured, you know, if you are, let's go the Farley, right? Farley's his
Farley.
Name. Let's go Farley's route. If you're coming back as like a top of the line chemist,
right? Why are you working at Dad's grocery store?
No, not just that. Not just that, but you have a degree in chemistry, you're probably above everyone else in a at least a educational level. There should be a sense of pride to that.
There should be.
Then why do you want to get back? Isn't that just
Who's to say that the instinct for revenge has not been there since before he left, and this was a means to an end for him? You know, he studied chemistry. Maybe not expressly, but in his mind the entire time, saying, yeah, I am going to get back at these people. Anybody who can gas 26 individuals is not, like, all there.
Okay.
Right? They're
so
not a normal human being
with
empathy
and
things.
If you are fantasizing
right.
about this for, let's say, a decade?
Right-ish?
Yeah.
Probably around, yeah.
Why are you stopping with just paralysis?
Dude, who knows?
That's all I'm saying.
I know,
like,
but
if this is something that has been eating you at your core for such a long time, why is it that all we're doing are playing jokes and pranks?
Well, but it's not a joke and prank. I mean, people are getting hurt. People are swelling, coughing up blood, things like that. But that's the thing is, like, we can't this person is if it was Farley.
I think one of the biggest issues...
Allegedly. We have to say allegedly so we don't get sued. Although everyone related to him is dead, so I think we're okay.
Even both of his sisters?
Even both of his sisters. Huh. He died, by the way, I don't know if I said that. He died in the asylum.
I'm assuming he has, of course, like no...
Next of kin?
No, I mean, like, he had never spoken of the subject.
Oh, no. Of course not. And I hate to say it.
When did he die in the same asylum?
Don't know. He was in an asylum.
Just question mark.
At least since 1944, which, right. as we know,
was I was not curious the best if he got to old age. Yeah, no.
Yeah. Terrible. I don't know that he did. I don't know that he don't. Again, that's one of those things. I tried to find it, but without actually buying that book.
Right, right.
Which I wasn't going to do. No. I couldn't find exactly it. And even then, he's still kind of a mythical character. I mean, it's not as though he didn't exist, right? You can check the census records, right. all of that. But there's not a whole lot known other than he was weird. He was apparently great at chemistry. And then this weird, like, confluence of events.
Right, and I think some of that can get fabricated over 70 years of time.
Right. But I feel like, especially the part where he did go home, the author, did go to Mattoon, and was interviewing, talking with people, and they were saying, yeah... Yeah, it was Farley. Yeah, we all know it was Farley, but Farley was a in his own way, powerful individual, and it was one of those secrets that just stays covered up, you know? I mean, for me, there's a lot more...
So, do you think it's actually Farley, or do you think it's those people blaming Farley so that they don't have to confront a mass hysteria? I'm not going crazy. It was that guy.
No, I don't think so. No,
it was definitely that guy, that chemist...
Right.
I wasn't freaking out because, you know, of what I read in the paper and what I was hearing from all my neighbors.
Right. So then why did the same day, like, you just have to look at all of the coincidences. Why is it that right after Farley gets admitted to an asylum, that's when the police say, okay, we're good. We're just going to drop this. And yeah, it was mass hysteria. You were all wrong. You're all crazy people. Deal with that.
Well, see, that also brought up, as soon as the paper essentially started publicizing it as mm-hmm. a mass hysteria, everything died.
Well, the paper publicized it. Yeah. And that, again, so the paper did start talking about it as a mass hysteria for sure, because the police, the government, everybody started talking about it, essentially just doing a reporting. Not to mention you have the Chicago Tribune, the Decatur Times, all of these other big papers
reporting as national mass hysteria.
Yeah. And it's a stigma that's been attached to the town of Mattoon, Illinois. I mean, I feel like, because this book was written in like the early 2000s, these people have spent 56 years being called like crazy and mass hysteria and this and that. I feel like at that point, if that's what they really believe, they're just going to own it. And again, okay. Before that statement, and even in that statement, the cops are saying there are gas attacks happening. There's just not as much as is being reported, and everybody needs to get a grip. And then after that, just a week or so later, they come out and say, actually, there was nothing. There was nothing. It's all mass hysteria.
Right.
They just change their tune as soon as Farley goes to the mental institution. That's a big coincidence, man. I can't swallow that one.
All right.
I can't.
That's fair. And I think it's, you know, just one of those things that people have to find out for themselves.
It is. It is. And I think we've done a good job of presenting all the information. You can make your own decision, and I'd love to hear from it. Tweet at us. Let us know. I think I'm good with it. I'm going to say Farley did it. That's my theory.
All right.
Yours is mass hysteria.
It's a great
theory.
Do you think
there's even a single gas attack that even happened?
No.
All right.
I think the first person smelt something funny.
Uh-huh.
And...
All right, dude. I mean, I could fight. I could and would, if it was not literally midnight right now, fight you for the next 6 hours about this, but all right. All right.
I mean, we could. All you would have to do is get ready for the balloons.
I know, at 6 a.m. That is your belief. You're entitled to it. That's fine with me.
I think, really, I just need to do a little bit more homework.
Do it. Do it. Figure that homework out.
No. Stop that.
Do it.
Don't look at me like that.
All right, guys. That's the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. Any last words you want to say? Anything?
Doesn't the mad scientist have a chemistry degree?
He does, yeah. Chris, get on this.
There you go. Let us know.
That's my call out. Chris, if there's any physical
issues, this gas real?
Is there a... nitromethane is real. I at least looked that up.
Was nitromethane a real thing that you could make in the 40s?
Take a look.
Easily.
Well, technically, it didn't have to be easy. You just had to be able to do it. And any gas...
In a large quantity.
I was going to say any gas you can make, but that's not true because like xenon and like neon.
So that's our story for the day. Let's get down to the rest of shenanigans.
Shenanigan, fanigan, hanigan, here we are. So, guys.
If you're still with us.
Which I don't blame you if you're not. Hello. We just have one iTunes review. We just got one review this week. I'm going to read it. It's by Paul M54321. Hello, Paul.
No, zero?
No.
Paul.
Zero. Paul, you let him down. So, Paul says, Sam and Jason make you feel like you are in their living room with them.
Oh, good, because you are.
That is true. We are in my living room. Telling you these fun and spooky stories. They are passionate, creative, and have a lot of humor. I especially love their banter and differing views. Oh, good, because this was nothing but both of those. Keep it up. Thank you, Paul. We really appreciate that. And it's literally stopping me from killing Jason right now. So,
wow.
You heard me, son. You heard me. No, I wouldn't kill you.
I don't think you could.
Slow death.
I still don't think you could.
And then we got two new patrons.
Like with gas?
You got it. Now we got two new patrons. We have Paula Green.
Yay, Paula.
And we have Emma Larson.
Yay, Emma.
All right. Thank you both so much for becoming a patron. If you get $5 worth of value out of the podcast, feel free to head over to patreon.com/notalonepodcast. For the price of a cup of coffee, you can unlock all sorts of bonus content, literally over, I'm going to say probably over 6 to 7 hours a week, or not a week.
Oh, gosh.
A month when all is said and done between extended editions. For example, I don't know what the final cut's going to be this episode. Right now we're at 2 hours and 17 minutes. So head over there. If you want to support the show, that's a great way to do it. If not, iTunes reviews, we love those. They make us feel good inside. They may or may not help us with the search algorithms. The jury's still out on that one, but we still enjoy it.
Oh, interesting.
And it's also just like a mark of pride to be like, look at all these people who like our stuff. And then if there are people who don't like our stuff,
it is so weird. No, I think that's it today, Sam. I think we're good.
All right. All right. So you can find us on Twitter at Not Alone Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Not Alone Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Not Alone Podcast.
Or my favorite, you could just Google.
You can Not just Alone Google Podcast. Us. But here's the thing. The
choose your
top
favorite.
Thing, you what? Don't want to click it because it's, well, actually Google it right now.
Ah, it is. It's still Libsyn.
It's still Libsyn. So don't go to Libsyn, but literally any of the next like 7, 8.
All of it.
8, 9. Yeah. Like 8 of them down, there's another show that's not ours, but you have a lot.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you have The Truth by The Truth Podcast. You Are Not Alone on SoundCloud. The Truth is a great podcast, though. The Truth is little serialized, They're like not docudramas. Radio dramas, just like little short radio plays. They're amazing and heartfelt and scary and funny and everything. So check out The Truth. That's where that got us. NotAlonePodcast.com. You can find us there. You can find us and other fantastic shows better than ours, or at least like ours, probably better than ours, at
Sam.
darkmyths.org. What? Should I not be shilling for other shows?
You can, but just don't. Bash on ours.
Don't say it's like a bad thing. Okay. You can find other great shows over at darkmyths.org. That's part of the collective that's the collective that we are a part of. You can find shows like Astonishing Legends, Pleasing Terrors, Monsters Among Us, Blurry Photos, The Eastern Border, The Lone Gunman, Pete's Paranormal Chronicles, Iroquois Myths and Histories and Legends. Oh, Hillbilly Horror Stories, The Conspirators. I'm forgetting people, but every show on there.
Wow, that's pretty good, though.
There's like
quite a few.
And there's like 30 more. A New Winter.
Oh, goodness.
I'm done. If you enjoy our show even a little bit, go there. You're going to have, it's going to be like Christmas. You're going to love it. Darkmyths.org. Get there. I did it last week.
Go ahead. Remember, whether you're gasping for air or realizing your uncle just let one live, we are
not alone.